You're listening to I'm Right, Deal With It with Andy Parrish.
My, oh my, spending other people's money must be fun because that's what they like to do in Washington. See, they like to take your money and they like to use a bunch of big words and pretend that there's a big fight and pretend a bunch of bad things are going to happen if they don't get something done. And then lo and behold, at the last hour, they get something done and they're the hero. Yeah. See, these knuckleheads are too incompetent to put together a budget, and that's not nearly as fun because then they can't spend as much of your money. Instead, they do what's called a continuing resolution. In a continuing resolution, they would have you believe that if they don't pass this continuing resolution, government's going to shut down. Grandma's not going to get her Social Security payments. Grandma's not going to get her Medicare, so she's going to go to the doctor, and she's going to lose her home because she doesn't have her Medicare and her Social Security and blah, 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 and veterans who served us, which, by the way, thank you for anyone listening that has served our country. But veterans who served us, they're going to be homeless and they're not going to get their pension. They're wrong. But that is what the news readers over at CBS and Nothing But Clowns, Nightly News, Lester Holt would have you believe. As they would have you believe that without passing this, all of these terrible things are going to happen. But by the end of this program, folks, you're going to be able to get into a debate with anybody over the debt ceiling and the continuing resolution nonsense. And you're just going to be able to finish and say, you know what? I'm right. I'm Andy Parrish. I'm right. I'm going to break it down for you. And you'll be right. A continuing resolution, when the parties can't agree on passing appropriation bills through their proper channels and creating a budget. The federal government has roughly 12, well, they have 12 appropriation bills. And they're for all sorts of different things. You have your national defense, you have your judiciary, you have your highways. I mean, you have many different things. You have your agriculture bill. I mean, you have so many different things that each committee is supposed to put together a budget, pass it, you vote for it on the House floor, and then it's over. And then everybody knows how much money we're going to have to spend and where we're going to get it from. But that's not nearly as fun because then they can't attach their garbage pet projects onto it and get it passed at the last minute as part of a negotiation tactic. In fact, there's even been situations where vulnerable members of a party are facing re-election, and the party who the member is not a member of, who's in the majority, they will put funding in that member's district and make that member vote against it. This is a political game, and it's a way for some people to take your money and bring it home to their district. So let me back up. In our budget, we have two distinct categories. We have what's called mandatory spending, which is simply spending that we are required by law to spend. And then we have our discretionary spending. Discretionary spending should be done in a budget, but instead it's always done in a continuing resolution. See, the mandatory spending, when you hear that fight, that is over what we call the debt ceiling, which is how much the Treasury is authorized to sell bonds, so to go into debt, to anybody who wants to buy them so that we can pay our bills for our mandatory spending. Now, you're probably shaking your head like I am going, now, wait a minute, if we have a mandatory spending portion of government and a discretionary portion of funding government, why do we have to borrow money? Which is really scary. And we're going to talk about who buys our debt and why they buy it and how it hurts us, not just with our debt here at home, but how it hurts us economically. And we're going to finish up with that. It's a very good question. So let me break it down one other way for you. Mrs. Parrish and I, we have a mortgage, we have a car payment, we have tuition payment, we have insurance payments. We have contractually agreed to make those payments. I am required by my contract when I signed our mortgage that we will make a payment. Same with my car. Same with our auto insurance. And same with our children's tuition. So in any normal household in America, when Mrs. Parrish and I get our paychecks, we take care of our contractually obligated agreements first. We pay the mortgage, we pay the car, we pay the insurance. Then whatever we have left over is considered discretionary spending. So her and I can go out to dinner. We can take a trip to Costa Rica. We can do all sorts of things, right, with our discretionary funds. That isn't the way the government wants to work. The government and the politicians and the members of Congress, they like to start with the discretionary spending because they can't borrow for it. But they can borrow for the mandatory spending. So what do they do? See, the mandatory spending is already set. It's already set. What we have to pay people for Social Security, for Medicare, for Medicaid, for veterans benefits, for retirement, for SSI, for you name it, what's in there that's considered mandatory. We already know what that is. But discretionary, we can't borrow for. So what do they do? This is the craziest thing in the world, but this is what happens. So let's assume for a minute that Mrs. Parrish and I want to go somewhere and spend some discretionary money, and I have these contractual obligations. It would be like me borrowing money from you or your neighbor or somebody else because I say I need it or bad things are going to happen, and I use that to pay my bills, but secretly I'm saving my own money to take us on a 5-star cruise. That make you mad? So simply just say when I'm borrowing the money to pay my mandatory bills, that's what the federal government does. Then they take whatever cash is there, and that's their fund money. That's their money that they essentially buy votes with. That is their money that they bring home to their districts and try to get in the local weekly newspaper holding a check, presenting somebody a check. It's crazy. And they used to, way back when, they were competent enough to be able to put together a budget, and then we just knew it, and that was it. But that doesn't get votes. Bringing home money does. Your money. Wasting your money and borrowing from other people to pay their mandatory bills. So the debt ceiling, when that needs to be increased, they authorize the Treasury Department to sell more U.S. bonds. Anyone can go buy one. Crazy, right? You'd think, oh, well, who would want to buy that? I'll tell you who. You know who the two biggest holders are? Other than the Social Security and Medicare Trust Fund. So sometimes our own agencies buy from us. Social Security Trust Fund and Medicare Trust Fund buy bonds from us, which is another crazy tangent on its own. But besides ourselves, China and Japan, they hold the most American debt altogether. And they want to keep buying more debt and more debt and more debt. And Trump understands. So Trump is a businessman. He understands this. Kamala, could you just see her with President Xi, by the way, sitting down going, well, I'm a biracial and I grew up in a middle class family. I mean, do you think President Xi cares at all about that? No. Where do all our goods that we purchase come from? China. That's right. It comes from China. See, China is one of the world's largest manipulators of currency. China, actually, every day, the national bank there sets kind of a value for what the yen is worth. So here's what happens. There's a sweet spot where they can lower the price of the yen to make the dollar stronger. And because you have to use U.S. dollars to buy a bond, China takes U.S. dollars out of circulation, which creates a higher demand for U.S. dollars. Then what China does is they weaken the yen just enough so that their economy is strong, but so that it becomes really, really, really cheap because the dollar is stronger than the yen for us to buy our products from China instead of making them here. That's how they do it. It becomes very financially advantageous for China to lower the yen just a little bit, but keep the dollar strong and stable. The more of our U.S. dollars they have, the more that is not in circulation, which means there is more demand for the U.S. dollar, which then makes it stronger and it makes it worth more. The yen goes down just a little bit. It all of a sudden becomes cheaper for the United States of America to buy our products from China instead of here in the United States. We think it's great. We're like, hey, the dollar's doing great. The dollar's worth a lot. The dollar's good. Dollar's strong. Now let's turn that around a little bit. The only way, and again, the only way to get China to stop doing this is to A, stop selling them debt. And we could stop going into debt. Problem solved. We'd be a very prosperous country if we did that. But we won't, because that doesn't bring money home to individuals. And you've seen it. You've seen it all. My rep, Derek Van Orden, said at one point during the campaign when he was campaigning for Congress that earmarks were ripe for corruption. And yet dude goes out there and he requests $70 million worth of earmarks and brags about how much he got. And they're all like nothing to do with the federal government whatsoever. But it's fun for him to come home and hand those checks out. China buys the debt. China lowers the price of the yen. The dollar becomes stronger so that China can then export and buy. We can buy more and we can buy it for cheaper than we can make it. So when Trump starts talking about, hey, who's going to pay for X, Y, and Z? And people say China. Here's how they're going to pay for it. We're not going to stop spending. I wish we did. We're not going to stop borrowing. I wish we did. But what we can do, if China is going to manipulate their currency, we can slap a tariff on everything they export to the United States of America. And we can play the same game they do. We can manipulate that tariff up and down as need be. And if we do that, it's no longer as advantageous. Now, people are going to say, Andy, they're just going to raise their prices. They're already importing it to the United States at what they see as the maximum profit that they can get. We slap the tariff on there. All of a sudden, it doesn't become as advantageous to buy our debt, to weaken their yen, and then to export product to us. What does that mean for the United States then? It means, one, if we're not selling them debt, we have less debt. Number two, it means our dollar remains strong and we can employ more people here in the United States to make things here. Either way, we still get our goods and services from China at what we're paying now because China has already decided this is the maximum profit that we can get. Slapping the tariff on there gives them less profit. Less profit makes it less advantageous. I hope you're following that. Because you're going to hear on the news after the Republicans just caved on everything. Aren't we good at that? Aren't we so good? Aren't us Republicans, we are like the world's worst negotiators that you'll ever find. So what? Shut it down. They removed the SAVE Act, which is so common sense. I don't know why you wouldn't keep it in there. I don't know why anybody would oppose it, but simply says that you got to be a U.S. citizen to vote in a U.S. election. That's it. Democrats said, no way. We kept pushing for it. And now we took the one bargaining chip that we had out and got nothing. We got nothing. The Democrats get to spend money. They don't have a prohibition on illegal immigrants voting in American elections. They get to look like the savior, and everybody gets to bring money home to their district. Your money. So that they can get a pretty photo. Folks, I wish that we had more than a handful of conservatives in D.C. that actually understood what you now understand about why China wants us to be in debt, because it enriches them through the exportation of product, because they weaken the yen. They take the dollars out of circulation, which creates a higher demand for U.S. dollars, which keeps the dollar level, stable. We can then buy more from them because our dollar is worth more, and we can buy it for cheaper than we make it here, all because they manipulate their currency. So I do hope Trump gets in and slaps a tariff on them. It's the only way to get them to play fair. But you would think out of 435 members of Congress and 100 U.S. senators that they would all know this, but they don't, or they don't care. One of the two, they probably don't even care. I don't know. Maybe they don't even care. Which is really sad because it's your money. Now, on my website, andyparishow.com, love that site. Head on over to that site because you will see on there that there is a live national debt counter. It updates every 1 second. Do you know what our current national debt is at right now? I can't even say it fast enough because it updates every 1 second. 33 trillion, bunch of zeros, 15, 755. 0000.453. the way our government operates right now, because these clowns can't put together a budget and we just keep going more and more and more and more into debt. Guess how much we generate per hour of debt as a country? You ready for this? $83 million an hour of your money is what they generate in debt. And who's buying it? China. What does China do? They limit the supply of dollars by getting more because you have to buy it with American dollars. They take American dollars out of circulation so that there's a higher demand for dollars. They weaken the yen, which makes it more affordable for us as Americans to buy all of our stuff from them. But isn't it fun? And then we get these continuing resolutions and we get these members of Congress that say, well, we have all this money, but let's divide this up between mandatory spending and discretionary spending. Because see, discretionary spending, that means they decide. And money comes home to people's districts. It is such a game. It is so immoral to generate $83 million an hour in debt. They don't care. And so-called conservatives, people from my own party, which, God, it's almost becoming impossible to say that we have conservatives in Washington anymore. It's almost becoming impossible to say that we have people that are looking out for your best interests. They're not. There is a handful of them. We had a bunch of them. Then they kind of just went on their way to go do something else. It's a hard life being a member of Congress. I know. I was a chief of staff to one for, 7 years, 8 years, something like that. It's a hard life. But they moved on. And now we don't have any left. And the ones that we do have left, they get very quickly ostracized from the party as crazy because they're trying to do what's right. So what's the solution? The solution is, one, stop incurring debt. It's kind of like the border situation. Seal the border before you do anything else. Got to seal it. Otherwise, there's no point in doing anything else. Stop the debt. Well, how do you stop it? You have this mandatory spending. I'll tell you how. You take a look at discretionary spending. And discretionary spending is full of what's called pork. And pork is what members can get for their district that they have no business getting. My member of Congress, God, I hate calling this guy out. I had such high hopes for him, and he just turned out to be such an utter disappointment that I'm at the point now where he's got to earn my vote. Otherwise, I'm going to leave it blank. But Derek Van Orden, he was quoted in the campaign when he ran as saying that something along the lines that earmarks are the gateway or the doorway to corruption. You know what dude did his first 2 years there? Requested $70 million in pet projects for his district. But then back home, he says, oh, it's open for corruption. Do you know how immoral it is to take money from somebody in Alabama and have them buy something for a city in Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district? That's not federal government. And you know what that kind of wasteful spending does? Instead of taking that money and putting that money to mandatory spending, we go into debt with China, who then holds our dollars to reduce the number of dollars in circulation. They weaken their yen for just a little bit, and it becomes so much more advantageous for us to import their goods instead of making them here. Yeah. Yeah, see? We have grown adults in Congress who don't understand this. We have people running TV ads saying, I want to do this, but they're spending your money and they're addicted to it. It is fun. I almost feel like we need to put on some type of 12-step program for these goofballs to stop spending because they are so addicted to it. $83 million an hour addicted. Again, if I borrowed money from you because I told you if I don't, I can't pay my mortgage, my kids are going to have to go to a different school, my car is going to be repossessed, and I'm not going to have insurance, you're going to be like, well, heck, Andy, here you go. You're such a good guy. Here you go. Here's the money. Don't let that happen. And then you find out that my wife and I go on a vacation to a 5-star hotel in the Caribbean. You're going to be a little mad. And then you say, Andy, let me see your budget. And I say, oh, we haven't done one of those in I don't know how long. To see if I do a budget, then I can't go out and spend money willy-nilly and I can't spend on what I want. Folks, this has got to stop. We're coming up to an election soon. 43 days, I think it is. Kamala Harris does not understand this. Tim Walz doesn't care. Donald Trump does understand this. Can you imagine for just a minute Kamala sitting down with President Xi? Oh, yeah. Hey, my name is Kamala Harris, and my pronouns are she, her, and I'm wearing a blue suit, and I'm biracial, and I grew up in a middle-class family. Do you think President Xi is going to care about that at all? No. The cycle is going to continue. It will continue, and we will go further in debt. President Trump, on the other hand, when he says that we're going to fix this and China's going to pay for it, and people are like, well, how? See, President Trump understands that when China exports goods to the United States, they sell them at the maximum profit they know they can get. Now, if they're going to lower their currency, we can slap a tariff on them and adjust it. Guess what happens? People making the products aren't making much money because the government's taking it, and we can take that money and reduce the debt. See where I'm going? We can turn the table here. Tariffs can reduce our debt and make us less willing to spend. You're going to say, Andy, prices of products are going to go up. No, they're not, because China still has to do something. They can't let it sit in a warehouse, and we're a huge part of their economy. And if it does, then jobs come to America. But see, the only way to start reducing our national debt, the debt ceiling I told you about, is to make the people who caused it pay for it. So if they want to play the manipulation game, if China does, let's play it back. Slap a tariff on them, keep it just enough so they're still importing goods to us and the profits are coming out of them. And since they know if they jack their price up too high, then American manufacturing comes in, then they have no product to sell. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. If they exceed what America can make it for by jacking their price up to cover a tariff, people are going to buy American. It is a brilliant plan. We can have the currency manipulators in China, who have greatly contributed to driving up our debt and costing jobs here in the United States, we can make them pay for the debt that we're driven into. None of that works if we can't get our members of Congress to stop spending your money. But they won't do it. And so here's what we need to do. First of all, share this podcast with people and explain the simple concept that I've explained. Go on, follow me on Twitter, engage me there. I'll answer questions there. Go to my website, but subscribe to the podcast. You can get it pretty much everywhere now. And share it with people so that they understand this. Then let's hold our politicians accountable. And here's how we do that. I said earlier, my representative, Derek Van Orden, who I voted for, I had high hopes for him. Been a huge disappointment. Huge disappointment. I mean, it's like, gosh, they get to D.C. and they say, how liberal can I become? I'm in a spot right now where I am not voting for him, and I'm not certainly not voting for his opponent. I'm just going to write somebody in or leave that blank. And now that I've said that, everyone's going, well, but you're going to vote for the Democrat then by not voting for Van. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. I am not. Our founding fathers, I've said this 100 times, were very clear in the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson wrote this: governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. This is our government. We consent. We don't pick between the lesser of two evils. Do that, you're still picking evil. That's not what we do. We give consent. I have 2 daughters, gorgeous daughters. I wish I only had 2 boys after each of them. Yeah, the gray hair's coming in. But let's say one of them comes home and says, Dad, I really can't decide who I'm going to marry. I want you to give me your consent to marry one of them. I say, okay, honey, tell me what we're working with here. And she says to me, Dad, I want you to meet the abusive alcoholic over here on the right. And over here on the left, I want you to meet the drug addict who doesn't have a job. And am I going to say, hey, the drug addict doesn't beat you? He's the lesser of the two evils. So, honey, I consent to him? No. I'm going to say, honey, I consent to none. Let's find somebody else. And that's what we need to start doing. So again, follow me on Twitter, X, whatever it's called now, at Andy Parrish. Join me on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast and share this with people who need to hear it. And you know what? I'm Andy Parrish. I'm right. Deal with it. And guess what you get to say now? Next time you have an argument with somebody about the debt ceiling, continuing resolution, you can say, hey, I'm me. I'm right.
Deal with it. You've been listening to I'm Right. Deal with it with Andy Parrish.